TFU Performance Podcast. I'm your host, Jordan Sullivan, and this is the show where we break down popular science into easily digestible and actionable information to give you the blueprint to be a high performer in your life. Today, I'm joined by TFD dietitians Jack Doherty and Ryan Hassel, and we are talking about why athletes go to such extremes when it comes to weight cutting. The weight cutting problem in combat sports is serious, and as it stands right now, we really don't have a good solution. We've seen rule changes applied all over the world, really to no avail. No matter what the hurdle is, athletes seem to find a way to jump over it. So what is the solution? Before we get to that, we need to better understand the athlete we are trying to change, and that is what we are going to discuss today. If you work, study, or have anything to do with combat athletes, this should be an interesting listen. Let's get to it.
Hey, welcome to this week's episode of the TFD podcast. Today's episode, we've got myself, Jordy, and Jack, and we'll be having a bit of a chat about, I guess, like controversy, but more just like fleshing out some ideas around weight cutting in combat sports and just like weight class sports in general. So I guess to start off with, why don't we throw it over to Jordy? What's your current like thoughts about the whole culture of weight cutting and where it sits at the moment?
Boom, what an intro from Dojo. Hey. It's a cool episode that we're going to get going. We want to talk about weight cutting. Obviously, it's something we've done a lot in our career, and it's something that I'm having this conversation more and more. I guess where we are as a company, as a team, I guess we're kind of in a position where we can chat to a lot of different people, a lot of different organizations, a lot of different promoters, lots of different athletes, lots of different people of influence and get their ideas about this. And it's something that was brought to my attention this week. And in a sense, it kind of was a bit concerning for me to see certain people talk about this in a particular way. And we'll flesh that out in a little bit, but we want to go over what a lot of people think, but don't really say. And I think it's worth saying, and we're going to be talking about extreme weight cutting. And I think first and foremost, what we'll say, extreme weight cutting is terrible. It needs to stop. It absolutely should stop. No athlete should put their body at risk of losing their life, losing their health, just as a prerequisite to participate in their sport. That is beyond ridiculous. I don't think there's a single person in the world that disagrees with that. Where this argument gets interesting is when you talk about how do you do that? How do you get an athlete to a point where they can themselves make and we'll talk about this a bit more, an informed consent where they go, yes, I am very, very aware of all of the risk involved in doing this process. I'm aware of different ways to do this process, and I am going to make this decision based on X, Y, and Z. How do we get to a point where one, athletes are willing to take on that information, and then two, they make the best decision based on that information for their health? So we'll get started. And I think, Jack, I'm going to throw this one over to you. I put up a post the other day talking about guidelines when we're cutting weight, different weight classes. And there was a bit of feedback that I got. And just to give everyone a bit of reference, if you didn't see that post, I put up some guidelines, what I called mild, moderate, and aggressive guidelines for making weight. And now I think it goes without saying that everyone should be following a mild version if they're trying to make weight. You should be losing the most minimal amount of weight in your fight camp. That means you can eat the most amount of calories, fuel your body. You can get yourself as far away from reds and low energy availability as possible. And then when it comes to the final weight cut or the fight week, you don't have to cut as much weight. I think everyone can agree that's the best. In reality, that's not so much the situation. Jack, you've done this for years and years and years now. When you're looking at athletes like that, speak about that. What is the reality of the situation when it comes to how much weight athletes are actually cutting?
I think like obviously the more elite you go with your, you know, you're working with these clients, it depends. They're willing to take things extreme. That's what I've kind of noticed. As we get further in my career, people are wanting an advantage and people will do whatever they can to get that advantage. Obviously we're not promoting that, but I'm seeing more and more people come to us and like kind of, obviously one of the first questions I ask them when I start working with someone is what's their experience with weight cutting? And I've heard some absolutely wild things. Like I've heard, I think in our trip to Perth, we spoke to one of our guys and he was telling us what he used to do back in the day. And there was completely extreme. So yes, like the thing is about, you know, there is a bit of backlash and stuff like that because people don't like to see that information or they don't think that, they think that's kind of the promotion of it. But what the realistic view of it is, it's happening. It's probably happening a lot worse than what we put up there. but you're not seeing it because no one's talking about it. It's all behind closed doors. And what we're trying to do is to show everyone that, yeah, this is happening. These are the numbers that are kind of, you know, we call it aggressive, and we're giving them terms that should be given to these certain numbers. But this stuff is happening so much worse behind the scenes, but these guys aren't seeing it. And this is what I'm saying. Like, you know, you can have an opinion, but if you're not seeing what's happening behind the scenes, you're kind of just blowing hot smoke at us. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I think that's a good point. Like, and a lot of people somewhat forget this. Extreme is a great word to describe this in many senses, because yes, extreme weight cutting, I will say this again for everyone listening, no one should be promoting it. No one should be doing it. But you got to remember who you're talking to. You're talking to human beings that have actively made the decision to go train. And their training is that they throw different parts of their body at another human to injure that other human to a point that they can no longer continue. Like, that's a very, very extreme thing. I don't know if you guys, like, I don't know how you guys grew up, but to me, going to a private boys school on the north side of Brisbane, like, that's a pretty extreme thing, right? And like, these guys go in there and you talk to these athletes, they're willing to die. A lot of athletes go, I'm willing to die when I'm going there. That's just the mindset. It's a very, very extreme sport. I'm not saying that should be promoting violence or promoting it, but straight off the gate, anyone that gets into combat sports are probably pretty extreme people. And that's important to remember. And I'm not saying that that's an excuse for them to do extreme weight cuts, by no means. But I think you have to understand that's the type of person that you're talking to. So you have to understand and be able to get in their head and be able to connect with that person. If you ever want them to change their opinion on something such as extreme weight cutting, you have to understand what's going through their mind, what type of person they are, because we've shown it, we've done it. I've done it with so many athletes. You can change them. You absolutely can. You have to appreciate, though, that that's a very extreme human being that you'll work with. Let's jump straight into talking about how you can change this problem. I'll throw this over to you, Dojo, because over the years, we've spoken about it many, many times, and we've seen it all over the world, different organizations, different sports. There's this argument, if you want to stop extreme weight cutting, rule changes. If you just make different rules and you just make it impossible for these guys to not do, then they can't do it. If it's not in the rule set for them to do it, they won't do it. And we've seen, hey, well, you change rules, but they still do it. Again, does that speak to the extreme nature of these guys? What are your thoughts, Dojo?
When we talk about, I guess, like minimizing weight cutting or getting rid of weight cutting from combat sports and stuff, like maybe that does come from a rule change down the line. But just what we've seen so far is the ones that we've tried, they just don't work. So there's a couple of different examples that we can talk to, like just of different, I guess, promotions or even different sports that have tried like alternative strategies. Some things like, like one championship, they've got hydration testing. So like the guys, they weigh in and then they test their urine to make sure that they're hydrated. And then if they're beyond like a certain level of dehydration, then like they basically get pulled. But so like, that's one example. Then you've got other sports like wrestling and BJJ where guys they're weighing in and literally competing like on the same day. And like in theory, like, oh, they shouldn't be cutting, right? Because they've got like this bout coming up. So it's going to deter people from cutting because they don't want to be going into their fights dehydrated. But if you've got like a world championship match and you've got to cut 5%, like if you've got like Olympic champion, like Olympic finals or something, like people are not going to pass that up just to not go into a fight dehydrated. Like the stakes involved can really just as you guys have talked to of the extreme nature of the sport, the stakes can sort of like bump that extreme nature up even more. There are sort of like other strategies that have been tried, like with more traditional martial arts, you see like judo, taekwondo, those ones, even at the higher level, they still do like longer time periods between weigh-ins and bouts, like usually like 16 hours or like day before, but then they have like a random selection of that 5% rule. So like if you come in the next day and they pull you randomly and you're 5% over, then you get DQ'd. So that's like a way to stop people from doing it. But people just, they cut the first day, they rehydrate a bit. And then if they get picked, like there's a time frame and they'll just cut again. And then like, it's all like, like there's ways around all of these, I guess, is what I'm trying to say. Like, so far, like they might work when they're first brought out, but people will find ways around it because, as you said, it's an extreme sport. But it's for a lot of people, this is like also their livelihood. So this is like very, very important for them to make weight, to be able to either compete for money or to compete to make like a national team or like, yeah, like a world championship. And it's very hard to push people away from like doing something that they need to do by just adding in like a little rule. Like when people are forced to, they'll find a way around these sort of things. And that's kind of just like the trend that we see with a lot of these rule changes. They come in, they might make a change initially, people find a way around them, and then they're basically obsolete. And then at that point, you're almost putting the athletes at more risk, like with the same day weigh-ins and stuff, right? Compared to where people might be cutting, like say for MMA, where you've got up to like 36 hours in some cases, like usually about 24 hours between weigh-ins and the fight. People have heaps of time, so they're able to rehydrate and stuff, like as long as they're not doing like extreme weight cuts, obviously. Like if they're sensible about it, there is a time frame where they're able to rehydrate and refuel and come into the fight being like in a more, I guess, like healthy state or like less impaired state at least. Yeah, I guess like to speak to rule changes, to summarize that, it's basically just like we've tried them so far. We haven't been able to find something that works. Perhaps we might find like a magical rule that could potentially push people away from weight cutting. But until then, I feel like the bang for our buck is going to be in, I guess, educating people, as you were saying, Jordy, and just making sure that people are doing it in a sensible way that doesn't put themselves at risk, because people are going to still do it at the moment, like regardless of the rules involved.
Regardless of what the consequence is, they still cut weight, right? You see it in California where they do the post re-weigh-in. You can't be over, what is it, 15% or something like that. I know athletes who just won't fight in California, or they'll just cop the fine. I know organizations that do regular weight checks all throughout camp. It just causes regular weight cuts all throughout camp, and it throws off the whole nutritional strategy. I'm not at all making these points or getting the guys to make these points to justify this extreme nature. I want to keep saying that and keep getting that point across. What I do want to get across is that if we are going to elicit change in these athletes, we need to understand where these athletes are coming from, how they're thinking, why they're doing these things. Like Dojo said, they're extreme people. Not all of them, but most people who engage in combat sports, you're literally fighting another human. Even if that's just grappling, if it's judo, jiu-jitsu, it's intense. If you've never done it, it's a very intense thing. It's very extreme. I think one thing that is really, really important to talk about here, and I want to say this, and Jack, I'll get you to speak to this because we were talking about this earlier, again, to give some insight on how these guys think. Jack, Olympic athletes. Talk about what you were talking about before with gold medals and what athletes would do to obtain a gold medal in the sport they've trained their whole life for.
Yeah, I forgot the study, but it was back when I was doing uni, they used this example that they gave these elite athletes, I don't know if they're Olympic or elite athletes, that to be the champion of the sport, to win gold, to be the overall best in the world, would they sacrifice 10 or 15 years of their lifespan? And there was some like ridiculous high percentage, like 90% or something around there, that would accept the fact that they would die earlier to simply win that, to be the champion, to win the gold medal, to do those kind of things. So that's how extreme some of these elite athletes think. And that's the kind of concept that we're working with right now. That's what we're talking about.
Yeah. And it's the same. You can, I was listening to a podcast and they were talking about another study about athletes and doping and saying for Olympic athletes. And the question that was posed is if you could take a drug that would significantly increase your chances of winning a gold medal and it was illegal, but you knew you could get away with it, would you take it? And again, the majority of them said yes. Like a scary amount of them said yes, because that's how much winning means to these guys. I will say this again, I'm not condoning this extreme weight cutting, and I don't think anyone should be saying to any athlete, you should be cutting lots of water weight, you should be losing heaps of weight. But understanding how athletes think gives us a better idea of why it's occurring. Because this is what we're constantly seeing. Like we see these rule changes and we see all of these really, really well-intentioned efforts to stop weight cutting, but I feel it's not addressing the core problem. And the core problem is that there's a huge, huge problem in the culture of combat sports where athletes are expected to cut weight, paired with a huge amount of misinformation about how to do that. And those two together are the perfect storm to set up extreme weight cutting when you have an individual who is already quite extreme, who will do whatever it takes to win, that values winning above their health. I remember talking to researchers and other athletes and saying to them, and we'll talk about this a bit more, we know that acute kidney injury is a real complication of extreme weight cutting. We know that if you do extreme weight cutting, you're going to give yourself acute kidney injury. We don't know what the long-term effect of that is. I would bet my bottom dollar, and just from renal physiology, I think you don't have to be a nephrologist to understand this. That's a kidney doctor for everyone listening. Repeated bouts of acute kidney injury over time is probably going to lead to kidney failure in your future. But if you sit down and you say that to an athlete that's been training for 15, 20 years of their life, and you say, hey, Bob, if you cut all of this weight, you're going to lose 10% function of your kidney. Are you going to do it? I would bet my bottom dollar that they're going to say yes. And I know that they're going to do that because I've had that conversation with athletes. I've had that conversation time and time again, where we say, you can't do this. You can't do that. It's detrimental to your health. And they go, Jordy, this is my career. I have worked 10, 15 years for this. I need to do this. I need to provide for my family. I need to do this for my gym. I need to do this for myself. I need you to help me make weight. Again, I'm not saying that you should be supporting these guys. Even then, I don't think you should be saying to that, okay, I'll help you. I think you need to say to that athlete, no, go lose more weight and we need to figure this out. But I think it highlights this more systemic issue that it's not just rule changes that fixes this. It's that issue of there's a huge culture of cutting weight and that it's okay, paired with this misinformation about how to cut weight, combined with the extreme nature of these athletes.
This also goes back to, we're talking about like doping as well, right? So if we're talking about doping in general, people know how harmful doping can be for their bodies, regardless of what steroid or compound they're using, but also that people with regulations, USADA, people still are trying to find a way around it. So people are still doping, even though that they know how bad it is and they know there's rule changes, but people will always find a way, or whoever will find a way of getting around certain things to be able to do what they want to do, do what they think will give them the highest advantage. That's the same with what Dojo was saying as well. You put these rules in and then people are like, okay, no worries. How do we go bypass this rule to get where we need to be regardless? So it's, again, you're working with extreme people who do whatever it takes regardless of their health and regardless of the rules, basically. So it's just like you're working with all that. And if you're going to come at someone with like, you can't do this, realistically, are they going to listen? This is what we're talking about. You know, half the time when we work with some of these elite guys, who some are terrifying, it's more of a negotiation with when we're working with them, negotiating about how much weight they cut rather than us being the authority figure over them. We're always negotiating and helping them do what they want, but what we think they should do, and kind of always coming at this kind of, with all of this, the health in mind at all times, but kind of discussing how we do it in the safest way.
I think the drug analogy is like, it's good too, because it kind of like highlights that there's a potential to improve the sort of like the culture or whatever around it. Because you look back at like MMA 20 years ago, and that's what, like, everyone was on drugs, and you watch like Pride and all those, and like people just look like clouds because they're just muscle everywhere. It's like insane. And then you get the UFC come in, and then they get like the like way more accurate drug testing and stuff that comes through, and then you start to see it drop off, like all the heavyweights start losing all their muscle and stuff, and then like that sort of thing shows that there's like potential to improve this kind of stuff and like to improve the cultures and that involved. But like, it's like trying to expect people from Pride to just like not take steroids because it's bad for their cardiovascular health, when they're going up against someone who's like juiced out of their mind. Like the potential health risks there kind of change from, rather than it being like a chronic health condition, to like, am I going to die from getting punched by this guy? So like, until that sort of, that same shift happens with weight cutting, where we've got like people that are like at the moment where everyone's weight cutting, so everyone is coming back into a fight, like in MMA, for example, maybe 5 up to even like 10 kilos heavier, depending on how crazy their weight cut is. And then you've got someone else who's like, oh, well, you're telling them you don't cut weight because you're potentially going to hurt your kidneys in 20, 30 years. Like they're going to weigh up this like future health problem that they don't really understand much about, versus like they're going to be going into a cage with someone who's going to kick them in the head, who's also going to be like 10 kilos heavier than them. Like the, like there's a level of education there, but it's also like the whole culture needs to shift away from that first. Otherwise you're going to be having these, like to make these decisions of like my immediate health versus my long-term health in order to do this. Like until we can shift all of like combat sports away from weight cutting, that's going to be like a really big problem preventing people from, I guess, like making the smart choice to do smaller cuts or to not cut weight at all. That's just kind of how I feel at the moment. But like, it's kind of a positive because if it's worked for drugs, potentially it could work for hydration and weight cutting in the future. We just need to figure out how to like make that work, I guess.
Yeah, I like the drug analogy because I always think of, say, like bodybuilding, right? And I think this is a really good example as well, is that like look at all the Arnie back in the day, and none of them would openly say that, oh yeah, I'm on steroids. It's obvious. You can't get to that level without the steroid. But then look, fast forward, what, 30 years or whatever it is, and look at the complications. Like we're seeing the complications of what that is, and that's informing a lot of younger people saying, oh, you know what? Even if I am going to do that, I'm going to do it a lot more responsibly. I'm going to do a lot more responsibly because I know what those risks are and I want to best manage those risks. And I really do feel that, like you said, Dojo, that is how we need to approach weight cutting. Because the other argument that always gets thrown around, and we're comparing, it's not comparing apples and oranges, it sort of is, but if we look at boxing and MMA, a lot of people in boxing will say, look, we just add more weight classes and then that just resolves this issue. And I'll tell you, for a matter of fact, if you think that, or if you're someone who works with boxers and you think that adding more weight classes, you probably haven't had the exposure to see the reality of that situation, where it absolutely does not. Really, adding more weight classes doesn't fix this problem. And what my experience is, and again, coming back to understanding how these athletes think, for everyone that's listening to this, probably the most logical thing, that if someone said, okay, say we've got 10 weight classes and they're all separated by X amount of weight, why don't we add 20 weight classes so that they're only separated by half the amount of that weight? And then that makes it only, these people only have to cut that half of whatever more to get to that weight division. That's what everyone would logically think. Okay, you cut less and you just go into the other weight class, whatever's closest to your weight. I'll tell you for a fact, that's not how these athletes think. These athletes don't think like that. If you do that situation, they think, oh, okay, if I was cutting 5 kilos to get to my weight class, instead of cutting 2.5 kilos to the one close to me now, I only have to cut 7.5 to the one below that, and maybe I'll get a better advantage. That's how these guys think. And again, I will say this again, we're not condoning extreme weight cutting. We absolutely think it should stop. No athlete should be putting their body through this. But it's important we understand how these athletes think and have a real conversation about it, because that's how we elicit change. Like Dojo saying, until we get this seismic shift where everyone's on board of it, no rule change, no adding weight classes, nothing's going to stop athletes wanting to do this. It's that extreme culture change combined with education. You need the education so they know what they're doing. They know the risk about this. They understand how to do it. But also they're in a culture where it's okay to have those conversations and it's accepted.
Yeah. The thing that this goes back to, like, obviously many moons ago, I was a youth worker and I used to work with a lot of street kids in the city. And I sat on a lot of panels about like IV drug use with these young people, right? So it's the same kind of concept, obviously extreme health behavior on different ends of the spectrum. But some believe that giving people information about how to inject properly was the promotion of that activity. But our concept as youth workers was, these people are going to undertake this process anyway, regardless of our intervention. And what do we do to make sure that they prevent themselves from hurting themselves or getting, you know, sharing needles and so forth? So the education and letting these guys know that we were there to support them, not as a kind of authority figure and deterring it away, but just giving them, not obviously not promoting it, but giving them education, giving them a safe space to discuss it, and giving them a safe space to undertake activities, is something that, you know, by a lot is deemed promotional activity. But for us, it was like, these guys are going to do it anyway. All we can do is make it as safe as possible. So that's the kind of concept I come with any kind of extreme, what people deem as extreme health behavior. Like, what are we doing to just to say it's bad? Is what's that doing? But if people are going to do it anyway, which especially extreme individuals are from any end of the spectrum, how do we make it as safe as possible? I think that's what the discussion should always be, is how do we make this safe and how do we change the culture?
Thoughts, Dojo?
I honestly think that's a good sort of point to wrap it up on. I think as it stands at the moment, it doesn't seem like there's much of a shift coming until someone can figure out like a better way of either testing hydration or like enforcing like some sort of limits on how much people cut, like whether that's like 2% or like whatever. Like until there's a way of kind of policing it and forcing people through, which I guess would push the whole culture, like if they found a successful way to make that rule work, until we get something like that or a shift that comes from knowledge and people's understanding of like not wanting to put themselves at risk because they go down the healthier route and potentially like improve their performance that way. Until we get to that point, as Jack says, the priority is just kind of like making sure that the people that are doing this stuff are doing it in like as safe a way as possible and like sort of under the guidance of people that kind of recognize the risks and how to manage them. Like that's should be what we're focusing on at the moment until we can get that shift.
Yeah, and I think this is probably a good point to finish on. The point that I want to make is, I'm going to say it one more time, just for everyone listening, we're not promoting extreme weight cutting. I think it's absolutely ridiculous. I think it's ridiculous that an athlete has to put themselves at risk, their health at risk, in such an extreme nature just to participate in their sport. I think that is so beyond ludicrous, but the reality is it happens and it happens. It's going to continue to happen. If we keep doing real changes because of the way, and this is not everyone, we keep saying they're all extreme. There's a bell curve and it's that old saying, right? Society moves as fast as its slowest member, is that we need to consider these extreme individuals because they're the ones at most high risk of something terrible happening during these weight cuts. And something we speak a lot about as a team, right, is this informed consent. Informed consent. That's probably the first step forward to be able to effectively start managing this problem, is giving the athlete informed consent by explaining to them, hey, look, this is what we know will happen to your body if you do this. This is the very likely long-term consequences of this. This can be avoided if you do X, Y, and Z. And even then, by explaining all of that, there's a second part to that. And that's them being in a culture or them being in a mindset or them being an individual where they will take that information on board and not only take it on board, process it and put it to action. And that happens from culture change. And I know we talk about this all the time, but we see it. I've seen it with gyms that we've worked with. I've seen it at promotions that we constantly have a presence at. There is a way to change culture in weight cutting. And the way to do that is to give these athletes the education that they need about what the risks are. If you're going to go through this process, and we encourage you to do it in a mild way at best, this is the best way to do it. This is the absolute best way to do it as we know. And then these are the potential risks. You give them that informed consent. And then you create a culture within the gym by liaising with the key stakeholders, the coaches, the head coach, the wrestling coach, the senior members of the gym, key figures in the gym. You create a culture where weight cutting is not cool. If you cut a lot of weight, you're an idiot. You create that culture by working with them, building rapport with them, getting them to trust you, you proving to them that that is right, that by weight cutting, you're not getting this advantage. And by eating properly throughout your camp, throughout your whole year, and using these scientific ways to lose just a little bit of fluid weight, that actually leads to a better performance. That creates the culture when you say to this kid and you say, hey, Jimmy, you don't have to cut all of these big weights. Look at these top athletes like Israel Adesanya and Alex Volkanovski. They don't do it, and they're the best in the world. Look at the guys in your gym. Look at Johnny. Look at Timmy. They don't do it, and they're some of the best fighters in your gym. That type of culture is what is going to be so much more receivable by that athlete. They're going to then go, okay, maybe I don't have to cut weight. That is what I think we should be working for until, like Dojo said, until we figure out this, there probably is out there. There's probably smarter people than us that will figure out that extreme rule change that will stop this problem. There is a solution out there. We just haven't found it, but we need to address, okay, it's fine that it's that that will come, but we've got all the time in between until that does. And we have to address this now to look after these athletes. And that is the best way, in my opinion, in our opinion, when we've discussed about it, that's the best way that we have right now to do that.
Awesome. Well, that's a good point to leave it on, I think, Jordy. For everyone listening, thanks for coming along to my podcast. Thanks for jumping on.
And there it is, another episode of the TFD Performance Podcast. Again, weight cutting is a serious issue in combat sports, and if we don't work towards a solution as a community, we will likely continue to see athletes harm themselves attempting to make weight. Whether that is rule changes, culture change, education, or a combination of all three, first and foremost, we need to understand the athletes we are working with to start eliciting positive change. This podcast will be available through the podcast app, iTunes, Spotify, and YouTube, and follow along our socials at @_FightDietitian to see all of the best bits from our podcast episodes. Thanks for listening, and I'll see you guys for the next episode of the TFD Performance Podcast.